Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and guests.
Hi, I'm Paul Spain, and welcome along to episode 183 of the New Zealand Tech Podcast, a special edition this time round that features interviews that I carried out in recent days at Computex in Taipei, a chat with one of the Surface team from Microsoft HQ in Redmond, Washington, rundown on Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference, and also my comments on initial comments on spending a few days with Microsoft's new Surface Pro 3. So before we jump into the interviews, I'd just like to give a run through on the big trends of Computex this year. There are probably three areas that that stood out for me. First up, the continued size reduction of microprocessor technology and all of the things that are associated with that in terms of reduction in power usage and so on. Now, this isn't a new trend, the sort of the shrinking of technologies, but it's been going on really for a long time, and computing technology gets faster and faster and smaller and smaller. Now, Computex this year, this was evidenced in a number of areas. There were prototypes from Intel of their Llama Mountain tablet, which is effectively a PC in a tablet form factor, but incredibly coming in thinner than the current iPad Air from Apple. So very, very thin computing design, but from an Intel Core processor, in this case being Intel's upcoming Intel Core M chip, That was announced at Computex. Also in that vein, Asus showed off their prototype of the T300 Qi tablet that's going to come in there just over 7 millimeters thick, and also having that Intel Core M chip. Now, continuing on the trend in downsizing technology, one of the other areas that stood out for me is wearable tech. That's an area that is really starting to pick up some pace. I suppose we're still very much in the early days of it, but really you couldn't walk too far at Computex on the show floor without seeing some new wearable product. In most cases, from local Taiwanese or Chinese firms, and we'll dive in here a little bit more about wearable tech during the podcast from Intel. Now, thirdly, one of the other areas that stood out at Computex was wireless charging. Now, of course, you know, we've got used to sort of wireless connectivity to the internet, and in recent years, technologies like Wi-Fi that allow us to connect to projectors and TVs and wirelessly share video, but it's wireless charging technology that was really taking a lot of attention at Computex this year, starting with Intel's opening keynote where they demoed some of that technology, and we're fortunate enough to get some time with New Zealand's Powered by Proxy, a company that was spun off out of Auckland University in 2007, and they were on hand to share some details of their latest wireless charging innovations. So yeah, let's jump in from there. Let's jump straight into our interviews. First up, we're going to hear a little bit about wearable tech and where Intel are going as far as wearable tech is concerned. So right now I'm here with Tom Faldesi from Intel. Now, Tom, you're involved with a new part of Intel. Tell us what that group is and what your role is.
So I work in the new devices group at Intel. We're a relatively new group, a little less than a year old. We were created shortly after Brian Krzanich took over as the company's CEO and Renee James took over as our president. And the group was created in recognition of the tremendous market potential that wearable technologies have. Our charter is wearables and related enabling technologies.
Great. Now, in that wearable space, there's not a lot of products yet. There have been a few from various vendors and so on. We're starting to see that accelerate now. Second round of watches from Samsung recently and so on. But the scope for wearables is much broader than just smartwatches, isn't it? Can you give us some ideas on, you know, where this is heading and some of the concepts you think are going to become a reality in the future?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're very much in the early stages of this industry. No single usage model or no single device has emerged as a leader. And I think the space is growing quickly enough that there's an opportunity for a host of different devices to coexist, depending on what user experiences they offer. Earlier this year at CES, we unveiled a number of different enabling technologies, heart rate monitoring set of smart earbuds, low-power always-listening devices. In that particular case, we showcased it in a Bluetooth headset form factor, but that's not the only wearable in which we can integrate that technology. Wireless charging devices. We have announced a smart bracelet that we are doing with International Fashion Design House opening ceremony. And I think you're absolutely right. I think there's definitely, I think it's going to be a very vibrant ecosystem in terms of the different devices that will be available and that will thrive at the same time.
Now, one of the things I remember from CES, and you showed it in your presentation, a picture in your presentation earlier, which was something that a baby might wear, and you also talked about possibilities for smart sort of clothing for sports people. Tell us about those two and what they might look like in the future.
Well, our CEO, Brian Krzanich, actually just unveiled a smart shirt just a couple of weeks ago. It's based on an Intel technology codenamed Gossamer, and it's essentially powered by an Intel Edison platform, which interfaces with a host of sensors in a shirt. We're not really disclosing too much more about that right now, but it kind of underscores Intel's desire to get into the smart fabric space.
And what about this clothing that a baby could wear? What benefits could that bring?
It can certainly monitor heart rate, temperature, breathing rate. If you're a parent, I think that's all kind of valuable feedback. So you can track your baby's biorhythms real time and be alerted immediately if the baby stops breathing, if their heart rate drops, if their temperature drops or rises too high. And there are kind of very practical everyday usage models for that as well, in that you will be alerted immediately when the baby wakes up, not through a baby monitor, but something that interfaces directly with your child, a much more reliable, a much more innovative way to gather that information.
And you talked about potentially something that could be preparing a bottle for the baby?
That was just one example of a usage model that can be created. But once you have a device that wirelessly communicates directly with other mobile devices or that interfaces up into the cloud, how you combine different smart devices and how you architect the software backend for them to key off of each other is only limited by the designer's imagination. We're giving them the tools to be able to deliver that functionality.
And tell us what the possibilities might be with wearable clothing tech in the sports space. Is that likely to bring sort of real-time feedback to sports fans? We can see on our screens maybe how someone's performing, not only in, say, a tennis game, the realities of the game, but maybe some of the other factors in terms of fatigue and so on. How's that likely to look?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to transform the experience for fans. You'll be able to get insights that you've never had before. You'll be able to actively track how your team is doing. I think this is particularly powerful for team sports. And it also opens up kind of new avenues in coaching as well. It will allow coaches to kind of monitor their players individually and independently and make certain trade-offs, make certain coaching calls based on the information that they're being fed back by smart monitors and players' apparel.
Great. I mean, it sounds like we're very much just scratching the surface here in terms of what the capabilities are. And I know your team are working on all sorts of things behind the scenes. How serious is Intel about this wearable space? And what sort of size team have you got that are focused on wearables?
Intel does not disclose employee numbers by division. What I can tell you is that we're very serious about this space, and that's underscored by the fact that we have an entire group, the GM of which reports directly to the CEO, that is looking after this space. So this is definitely a strategic vector for Intel. Our CEO has come out publicly and said that if we are not a major participant in this space, then we'll be left behind. So I think everyone understands how important being successful in the wearable space is for the company. We understand that it's not necessarily enough when an ecosystem is in its infancy to have the right products. We have to be able to provide the spark for innovation. So when we look several years back, Intel was one of the key drivers of the proliferation of Wi-Fi. We intend to do the same thing for the wearable space. So we've announced what we call the Make It Wearable Challenge. This is an open invitation to makers of all stripes, professionals, hobbyists, anyone that has a passion for the space. We invite them to submit their ideas. These ideas will be adjudicated and we'll select 10 finalists, the ones that we feel are the most viable. They'll be given $50,000 in funding and significant mentorship from Intel executives. There'll be a grand prize winner who will receive $500,000 in funding. Second and third place winners will receive $200,000 and $100,000 respectively. So this is just one of the things that we're doing to ensure that we can support innovation in this space. Another thing that we're doing is donating 50,000 Galileo boards to universities and other educational institutions globally.
What does the Galileo board do?
The Galileo board is a larger form factor compute module. In some respects, it's similar to Galileo, but it is targeted more at the hobbyist community, universities, and other educational institutions. It provides a very user-friendly, Arduino-compatible programming environment. It has a single-core, single-thread Quark X1000 CPU clocking at 400 megahertz and supports a whole host of I/O on that one platform.
That's great. Well, thanks very much for your time, Tom.
Thanks very much for your time, Paul. Appreciate it.
So now let's hear about what Ford have been announcing at Computex, particularly as it relates to New Zealand. Okay, so I'm here at Computex. We've just been at the Ford announcement, and I'm with Joe Bison. Joe, tell us where you fit into the Ford picture.
Sure, thanks, Paul. My name is Joe Beiser. I'm Director of Connected Services for Ford with Asia Pacific, Europe, Middle East, and Africa responsibilities.
So tell us what's been announced today as far as from that connected technology perspective and how that's going to be good for the New Zealand market.
So what we announced today is that we're going to continue to expand our AppLink technology, which is the technology that allows you to bring your smartphone into the car, use the apps, and control them safely in vehicle by voice or steering wheel buttons. We've announced today that we'll be bringing that to New Zealand next year, and we are starting to work right now with partners to co-develop with them to ensure that we can deliver a safe, great experience for customers in New Zealand.
And what are the apps that have sort of stood out for, in other markets in terms of that have been quite popular? I understand audio streaming, that sort of thing is one of the top areas.
Yes, audio streaming is usually the first use case people think about in vehicle. So a lot of internet streaming, personalized radio, those types of products from the U.S. market and European market, Pandora, Spotify, TuneIn, those are all popular. But what we do, and the beauty of the AppLink technology, is we can customize it for the region. Because we keep all of the brains of the app in the app itself, and we simply provide the interface with our AppLink technology, whatever's most popular in each market, we can certainly work with those partners and deliver that. Beyond music, we get a lot of desired for location-based services. So find a parking spot, navigate, etc. We also, in China, what's very popular is a voice assistant. So we allow the technology to capture the user's voice, pass that back to the smartphone. That smartphone can then use cloud-based voice intelligence and then respond to the user. So that can offer things like tell me a joke or send an SMS to my friend.
That's cool. So so Spotify today is probably the leading sort of audio streaming product in New Zealand. The fact that you've got that in other markets, there's no reason to think that wouldn't be available sort of at launch within the New Zealand market?
Certainly. Certainly. We work closely with Spotify to ensure that there's nothing different or unusual in the dynamic of each market, but certainly that'd be something we would anticipate.
Now, one of the questions that's come back through on Twitter this morning has been for people that have got recent vehicles, are they going to have opportunity to gain access to AppLink?
Depends on the definition of recent. With Sync, with AppLink, in this new version for across Europe and Asia Pacific, we have upgraded the hardware of our Sync system. So older vehicles may not be able to upgrade to the latest version.
So if we were to go back 12 months, 24, are there going to be some cars in that sort of range that are likely to be able to be upgraded?
It's probably unlikely as we roll out the new hardware, which is just rolling out now. We'd have to figure out how to update the hardware as well in vehicle, so it wouldn't be something that the customers could just download the software and plug it into their car. There'd be a little bit more involved.
Okay, so I mean, I guess one of the common things that in terms of product releases that we have in the home is the big smart TV, and a lot of people like to decouple the smarts from the TV because they can update that regularly. Is there anything sort of on the roadmap as far as Ford's concerned that allows somebody to buy a car and maybe keep it, for more than a year or two and still be able to keep the technology updated? Or is that a bit of a challenge at the moment?
No, we do that today. We've been doing that since 2007 with our Sync platform. We allow users to update the software. And across the globe, we generally allow users to download to a USB and put the USB in the car to update the software. So that's our control mechanism so that we can have it securely managed. In terms of upgrading hardware, that's where there's a bit more of a challenge. And so we're continually looking at methods to do that. And we don't have a clean answer right now that I can share.
Okay, all right. And is there anything else sort of interest that's been happening on the Sync platform that listeners might not be aware of?
What I find most interesting is the emergency assistance feature that you heard about today coming to Taiwan. To me, it's actually my favorite Sync feature because it gives me the peace of mind that if I'm in an accident and, if the airbag is deployed, it will call emergency services for me, and it will call them directly, so it will get to me very quickly. And so that's one of the things that we've also continued to think about rolling across the globe.
Now, for those who might be interested in developing apps for the Ford AppLink platform, what's the process? How do they get in touch, and how difficult is it for them to participate?
So the process is to go to developer.ford.com. There's a method where you can see the code, work on that, and look through it. The only challenge there is we have a lot of people who want to develop apps for the vehicle, and we find better success when we work directly with the partners. So we tend to start with the largest partners in each market and just continually go through the list. If you've got a very unique app that works great in vehicle, love to talk to you and figure that out.
Good. All right. Well, thanks very much for your time, Joe.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Now let's hear about the cream of the crop of the announcements from ASUS, and certainly they had a lot of products to announce at Computex, but let's jump in and hear about two products that really stood out.
Okay, so now with Jackson from ASUS, and we're looking at arguably one of the most interesting new products announcement here at Computex 2014, and that's the ASUS TransformerBook T300 Qi. Now, I guess that the immediate thing that stands out about this when you look at it is just how thin the tablet piece is on this upcoming 2-in-1 device. Jackson, what can you tell us about the Qi?
All right, so our new member, the TransformerBook T300 Qi, it's one of the lightest, thinnest tablets, or transform into a notebook on a 13-inch device powered with the new Core i CPU from Intel. It also has the new WQHD display on a 13-inch device on a 1440p with LTE or non-LTE versions available around end of the year or early next year.
Right, yeah, it looks pretty stunning. That very high definition display is impressive, particularly in such a form factor. And yeah, this is, I guess, the very first product to be announced with Intel's new Core M CPU that's designed for these thinner form factors. Certainly that 7mm thickness on the tablet piece really will allow it to stand out in the market. I think the thinnest thing that we've seen previously in this sort of 12.5-inch form factor is the Surface Pro 3 from Microsoft, and that's I think about 20% or more on top of this in terms of thickness, maybe 30%. Do you think this will be able to attract a lot of attention in the market alongside the likes of the Surface Pro?
Oh, definitely. It's something that we're looking at to target the consumer and also the commercial market, in which I think the thinness, the beauty, the design, and the power that you need with the battery life on the device is something that is definitely available for every usage at home or at work. So I think something that we can look forward to as an alternative options for customers looking to buy other than the Surface product.
Right, now it looks like this could be as much as 6 months away. Do you know any more in terms of the battery life and so on, or is that something that'll come a bit closer to launch when Intel have sort of got final versions of the chips and so on available?
Yeah, we still have to wait for Intel's confirmations on the chips configurations so that we can do our testing and we'll have more definite confirmation on the battery life. But I think you can be sure that it is something that for future usage, battery life is very important in the design of our products.
That's great. All right, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay, and here's the other product from ASUS that really captured quite a lot of attention at Computex.
This is our new Transformer Book 5, where you just like what I just said, five devices. It actually has a phone, Windows phone, and then Android phone, and then going to a tablet mode. And then if you dock on a docking station, it will actually become a notebook. So there's actually two CPU inside, one on the phone, one on the tablets. The tablets go up to with a Core I CPU as well, with SSD inside. The docking stations can support with hard drive technology as well. So the overall wise, it's something that if someone is looking for just a device to meet any situation, any needs, I think this is definitely a device that they should look for.
And in terms of when is the new Transformer Book 5 going to come into the market? What's required for that to launch? Has it got current generation chips, or is this a future generation product?
This will be a future generation product as well, but looking at this, will probably be early next year's product. Introducing the New Zealand market.
Okay, that's great.
Now let's hear from FaceShift, who I ran into at the Intel stand at Computex. So right now I'm with the team from FaceShift here. Now their technology was shown off at the Intel keynote, and keen to hear a little bit more about this technology that has been taking advantage of Intel's RealSense 3D camera. The example we've been looking at here uses a prototype ASUS laptop with that RealSense 3D camera embedded in place of where the traditional webcam would be. So across to you to start with, Brian. Tell us where this technology's come from.
So this technology, which really looks at your face, analyzes your face, and puts your expressions onto new characters, has been used so far in the animation industry. So that's where it comes from. That's where we already saw a market when we started. And now is the time to shift this towards the consumer level, because now we have this Intel RealSense cameras available, and it's going to be exciting.
So maybe you can give us a rundown on exactly what the technology does.
Sorry, I forgot your name again. I've forgotten your name.
Doug. Okay, yeah, over to you, Doug Griffin, just for an overview of what the software does when used with the camera.
Okay, yeah, we take the input from depth cameras, both the depth and the RGB or video image that we get from those. And we teach our software the appearance and shape of a person's face. And once it knows that, in real time, we can convert that raw data from the sensor into actual expressions that are useful and interpretable. They could be used to drive a digital character. You could be used to play a video game as a joystick input device, so on. Yep.
And the sort of customers that you've had to date, do you have real customers? Have you got people who are interested? How far along the track are you with selling the product?
Yeah, we launched the product in November 2012, so we've been out for 16 months, I think, now. We do have a host of customers in the AAA gaming community and in animated film and visual effects. So some of those are Electronic Arts, 2K Games, Microsoft Game Studios recently bought it, and DreamWorks recently launched a YouTube channel in which they're using our technology and their great animators to produce content on a weekly basis.
Okay, oh, that's a great start. And where to from here? How long do you think until we'll see these Intel 3D cameras built in as standard into laptops and so on? I guess that's what will drive your product in terms of broad consumer adoption, right?
Yeah, we're really excited about this. We've always had an interest in democratizing facial capture. And up until a year ago when we launched, the only people that had this kind of technology were the very largest game studios and visual effects studios who could throw boatloads of money at hardware, customized software, hardware and software. We launched with an intent to democratize that. And last year when we launched, we supported the Kinect and Kinect-like devices. And that was great for game studios, either the AAAs or even the independent studios, because we... By democratizing that technology and lowering the price point of the hardware, it became accessible to a wide audience, but not nearly the type of audience you get when you actually embed it into a consumer product. What this is going to do in terms of, virtual reality, live interactive gameplay, Skype avatar, there's just huge, huge opportunities in the consumer space when the Intel RealSense 3D camera and similar devices are embedded into actual consumer products, whether that's a laptop or a tablet.
Great. All right. Thanks very much for your time.
And next up, let's hear from Tony Francesca of Power by Proxy, a firm that was founded out of Auckland University.
Tony, tell us what it is that that you've announced here at Computex.
So what we're announcing here is three new innovations for wireless power in the consumer electronics division. As you may be aware, Power Proxy has two divisions, one on consumer and the other one on industrial. The focus here for us at Computex is consumer, and hence three innovations. We're demonstrating the next fundamental capabilities in wireless power for consumer electronics, one of which is charging devices like smartphones, tablets, and so on at the highest power level in the industry. So to date, things have been delivered at less than 5 watts with many issues with thermal efficiency and so on. We're demonstrating today a 7.5-watt receiver for a phablet, for example. And we're also demonstrating multi-device charging resonance. So that's one innovation. The second innovation is a consumer is expected to charge their devices anywhere. And one of the important locations outside their home for personal use is infrastructure, meaning at hospitality suites, restaurants, and so on. And in those cases, what is important is how far can you actually place your receiver in order for it to be charged. Typically, people have tables or furniture, and the thickness of that furniture itself is really important. They don't want to have a pad resting on the surface. They would like to bury that pad and not be visible at all. So therefore, the goal is how can you place your smartphone or tablet on the table itself and believe it's charging right through the wood or the granite or the composite. And therefore, what is important there is referred to the industry as what's the Z height? or the distance the power needs to travel before it hits the phone. So there we're demonstrating the leading edge in resonance today, 30 millimeter distance travel for a receiver.
Okay, now that's not really something that we've seen a whole lot of as infrastructure set up for that. And of course, we don't have that many devices today that have wireless charging. I guess Nokia and Google had devices, but they're not sort of proliferating yet. What are the things that you think that are going to sort of push that across the line to bring this mainstream? And how important is the resonant charging with that sort of distance?
So there are a number of things that the market hasn't taken off on, and some of it has been inductive limitations themselves. So with inductive, the first thing is that you need very good alignment. The consumer has to place the phone at a very specific point on the pad in order for it to fully charge. If you move it slightly, it may stop charging. The other part is that full power cannot have been delivered in the past. The phone would heat up. And therefore, consumers were stuck with, well, if I place it here, it may charge in 3 hours. Or if I place it there, it may charge in 6 hours. So longer time to charge is not a compelling. If I have to place it perfectly, I don't know where perfectly is. It may not charge at all. Therefore, there's this user convenience that was not met. And perceived problems as well as cost. So what magnetic resonance, is delivering on is consumers don't have to know precise alignment. It can charge at full power without getting hot and be safe. And the cost structure is also coming down for consumer price elasticity, for demand to take off. So there's a number of things occurring with magnetic resonance. The other part is that in public locations, this is becoming more important as well, because batteries on smartphones don't last a whole day to start with. So if you can enable more convenient places for those things to be charged, even for people on the road, for example, you can find a power outlet almost anywhere, even if you're not at home. So the question is, how can you tap into and make sure your phone does not stop your productivity, access to information or communications and so on? So the public infrastructure is an important next step to overcome. And what we're doing today is demonstrating that even for installations where thickness of the furniture is a huge challenge, we've solved that problem. So all these things are converging to open up the market for more practical use cases and therefore the market to take off.
And where does New Zealand fit into this picture?
So New Zealand for us, as far as a market, but we think, obviously, New Zealand is an important market, not necessarily for size, but early adopters are also there as well. If we look at from a volume perspective of where the markets have taken off in the past, obviously North America and Europe has been next. But the absolute fastest growing market is China, or Greater China. Because in the United States, for example, what we claim in the past is that a large subscriber for mobile phones has been the United States, but China today has got double the population of phone subscribers than the United States has. And they're going to fast-track the smartphone market. Today there have been a lot more feature phones, but the population has become more valuable from salary, ability to purchase goods. So therefore, we expect that to be very large. Of course, all the benefits there will be provided to every country, including New Zealand. But New Zealand can be proud that it's now being respected for things beyond what it's normally been known as, for wine and dairy products and so on, but also now the leading edge technology providers. We're calling cutting the last cord. We cut the voice cord a couple of decades ago for mobile phones. We cut the data cord 10 years ago with internet. We cut the video cord, mobile video, the last 5 years. The last cord is the power cord. And New Zealand hopefully can be proud that it's enabling this large market to occur.
And so how much of a team does Power by Proxy have in New Zealand today?
I'm sorry,
sir? What sort of a team do you have in New Zealand currently?
So I'm not sure this is public information, but I can tell you that we're sub 100, and we're going through a huge growth spurt right now of expanding not only locally, but as I mentioned earlier, we've got bigger locations in North America. We're expanding China, and Greater China is an important next big growth area. So expect to see over the short term that we populate not only with sales, but also engineering support in all those countries.
Because
what we've done, as you've seen in the last 12 months, is we signed some big deals, including Samsung has become an investor in Power by Proxy. We signed a licensing deal with Texas Instruments, who's one of the largest semiconductor companies in the world. T-Connectivity, of course, also been an investor and customer. So now that we've demonstrated our technology and got big customer traction, the growth is now continuing to expand as a company as well.
So for you to be successful, you really need the Samsungs and so on to really now get behind wireless charging, right? It's got to be them putting it in their products to drive it.
Absolutely. And you've seen that they've done that. What they're now waiting for is resonance to make sure that it's ubiquitous everywhere, because the compelling value proposition from a technology and use case is on magnetic resonance.
So what we see today with the Qi wireless charging standard, I think that's at 1.1 level. Where's that going in the future, and where do your products tie in? Because you're a little bit ahead of the standard, aren't you, in terms of, you know, what you're developing?
The WPC, or Wireless Power Consortium, is the largest standards organization in the world. We are now over 220 people, which is more than three times the next A4WP in membership. This ecosystem has been in existence for the last 4 years. And since joining WPC a year ago, Power by Proxy is regarded as the enabler for resonance. We were elected to be on the board, and I'm also the chairman for the next magnetic resonance spec at a WPC, which is called 1.2. So we are driving the largest ecosystem and contributing to make that the next standard in WPC.
So as that becomes a standard, you know, what does that mean for your technology and your inventions and so on?
Well, we hope that we can bring all our know-how, all our expertise, and make this large ecosystem, this large market, be big enough for everyone so that everyone can enjoy it, not only consumers but also suppliers along the food chain. And hopefully Power by Proxy can be recognized for its contributions and valuations.
So you don't retail any of your own products, do you? You really look to partner up with the Samsungs and smaller vendors that might make accessories and so on to launch products into the market?
So we have a dual business model. For industrial, we design systems, and we'll also manufacture them and ship them as complete modules, because price and size does not matter in those situations.
What are some examples of your industrial products?
So we've developed and delivered systems, for example, that go into windmill applications that operate at 1 kilowatt or higher, for slip rings, for materials handling. So there are many applications, including aviation and transportation. In consumer electronics, we have a different business model. We develop all the basic systems, but then we license our technology because size does matter. There's not a lot of room in a smartphone or a wearable device to put another chip. So in that case, what we do is we perfect the design and then license chip companies. For example, you've seen Samsung, Texas Instruments, Linear Technologies. They will take our intellectual property and our patents and place it in a very small form factor, and then they will supply it to ODMs and OEMs like Samsung or end product companies that will ship the beyond wireless power module, the final device, like call it a smartphone, the tablet, the Galaxy Gear, all those things. So in that case, we are in the food chain in the developing, designing, and licensing our technology for consumer electronics.
Right, so the new things that you're showing off here, we might see them turn up in a product from Samsung or another vendor in maybe 6 to 12 months?
I can't judge on timing, but that's exactly what we're showing today, is that we can demonstrate a complete working system in consumer use case and terminology. And once we've proven those out, we expect that our licensees will then figure out how to make their own products. It may look and feel different and so on. That's product positioning. But we've matured the technology to a point and systems working that they can now move forward and make the products that consumers want in all kinds of size and shapes, costs, and functionality.
Great. And how far off do you think till we can, you know, you'll be seeing this type of technology and I guess a sort of bigger form factor, more power hungry type tablets like we're starting to see from Microsoft with Microsoft Surface and products like that?
So we believe we have an edge there because we've delivered power systems and solutions in industrial that operate much higher than a tablet or an ultrabook or a notebook can operate. We've delivered systems at 1 kilowatt. So it's now up to product companies to decide how fast they want to move. We know that the biggest volume today is smartphones. It dwarfs just anything else. The next one is tablets. Eventually there'll be, notebooks. But we think that wearables also can be a fast-track market. And so what we're demonstrating today is the third innovation. The third innovation is we're demonstrating a charging system for wearables. And that's what we call the personal 3D system. And in this case, there's a Galaxy Gear, Samsung Galaxy Gear, which is a smartwatch. And what is important there is that for the compelling value proposition for those kind of devices, they're the most difficult to do because they're not necessarily on a flat surface. One of those things is what we call irregularly shaped. The consumer can place in any orientation, in any location, and expect it to charge, which is the most difficult situation for wireless charging. We're demonstrating today that we can do that.
That's great. Oh, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome, Paul. Thank you.
Well, that brings us to the end of our Computex 2014 coverage from Taipei. But next up is a chat that I recorded with one of the team from Microsoft in Redmond, who's involved with the Microsoft Surface product. So right now with Cyril Belikoff of Microsoft in Redmond. Cyril, what's your role? Where do you fit in at Microsoft? We're going to talk about the new Surface Pro 3 today. So obviously you're involved in that team.
Yeah, I'm in the Surface team based in Redmond, as you say, in Microsoft headquarters, and I'm on the Surface marketing team.
Great. So we've just been having a look at the new Surface Pro 3. Now, it's still a way off until it's available here in New Zealand. I think late August, is that right?
That's right. We'll be available 20th of June in the US and Canada, and in the August timeframe, Australia and New Zealand.
Okay. Now run us through. There's been a few changes here from the first two generations of Surface. So this is the Pro range. So it's got full Intel Core processors, i3 through to i7. But you're really sort of pitching this as the one that actually can replace a laptop, and I guess that was that's certainly been the focus of the Surface Pro in the past. But tell us why you think the Pro 3 is really gonna nail it.
Yeah, that's it's a great question. The Pro line has always been a great laptop, and we really wanted this to be a tablet that can replace your laptop. And so it has a great new screen. It's a 12-inch screen versus a 10.6-inch screen from Pro 2. That's the first noticeable thing that you'll see. We've increased or improved the kickstand with a multi-position kickstand, so it allows you to give you effectively unlimited angles down to 150 degrees, and so you can customize it whether you're on a desk or on your lap or in first class or economy class on a flight. It really provides a lot of flexibility in that. And then comes with a great new keyboard with an improved trackpad or mouse pad with physical clicks and very glossy type of feeling. And then great new typing experience on the new thin keyboard.
Yeah, I quite liked the keyboard. It seems to be a little bit more spacious. Obviously, with a bigger device, I found myself still made the odd mistake after, you know, 30 seconds of usage, but yeah, certainly a step up, so that's good. And now there's also this magnet that runs across the top of the keyboard, so when you attach that to the Surface Pro 3, that's designed to give it more stability when it's on your lap. That the primary purpose of it?
Yeah, that's right. You know, the magnet fold will, you know, gently attach to the screen, and when it's on your lap, it provides essentially the same stability as a full base laptop, and so you can bang away to your heart's content while it's on your lap and have a really stable experience versus, you know, this thin and light keyboard that might, you know, bend and weave historically.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's probably quite as stable as having a full-blown laptop on your knees, and you also need a little bit of room for that kickstand because it has to fold back rather than just being covered by the weight of the keyboard, but I think it's definitely a step up. Now, just run us through the stylus. You're calling it a pen, but you've got a bigger stylus this time that's a little bit different from the previous. How do you think this is going to go with users?
Yeah, the pen is an important step for a lot of users. If you think about students, for example, you know, they learn through retention and through writing, whether it's the creative side of art and architecture and wood class, but also, you know, whether it's science, maths, everything is done through pen these days. You know, whether you're drawing in a biology, you're drawing the pieces of the human body, right? The lungs, the heart, the cells, that can't be done with a keyboard. And so educators are very excited about a pen and what that could mean for them. So we've made pen and inking a first-class experience in the Surface Pro 3, integrated into OneNote, and with a single click you can launch your OneNote and start writing and drawing immediately. We've improved the latency and the speed and how it feels, so that we're essentially trying to trick the human brain so it looks and feels like writing on a piece of paper, and that the ink is actually coming from the digital pen. And as soon as we achieve that, you get immediate adoption and usage of the pen.
Okay, that sounds good. Looking forward to trying that out a little bit more. Now, we've also got here the new dock for the Surface Pro 3. That's coming in at a similar price point, or the same price point as the dock on the Surface Pro 2?
Yeah, that's right. The device itself, spec for spec on Pro 2, will be on a similar price point, and the same for the docking station.
Okay. And any sort of step-ups in terms of the docking and the power connection? It seems the new power connector is a little bit easier than the last one, when you're just plugging your charger straight into the Pro 3.
Yeah, the docking station got gigabit connection, which is improvement. Got Kensington key as well, which helps for our business customers when attach it to the desk. And then, yes, the power connector for the Surface Pro 3. We got some great feedback about improving that, and now it's a very simple, easy magnetic click-in to get going.
Okay. Now, I think, you know, we've got a mix across our audience, from those that are you know, general tech enthusiasts through to CIOs and CEOs, some that are technology resellers. Where are you at in that process of making the Surface range available through sort of broad distribution channels, like what we see today for, you know, HP, Lenovo, and those types of brands?
Yeah, as I said earlier, in the August timeframe, we will have both retailers and our commercial resellers that we have today can sell this to our commercial and consumer customers. You know, once we've got up and running with those resellers, we'll continue to think hard about what it means for others in the market, so we can, you know, have better coverage.
Do you expect a bit of you know, kickback from you know, some of your loyal partners that aren't able to supply this product today? You must get some frustration, you know, in those regards, that it's hard for them to get hold of the product. There isn't really a channel available to them at the moment, especially looking at a country like New Zealand, where, you know, a lot of those that you know, supply technology are going to be outside of, I think, the four partners that you've got at the moment.
Yeah, you know, we wanted to be really thoughtful as we rolled out, and you know, those partners are giving us feedback every day, and we're thinking hard about, you know, how we take those next steps. And it's important to do that. And we just wanted to be thoughtful as we rolled out and make sure that we get the right partners scaled up, and then expand from there.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks very much for your time, Cyril.
Thank you.
Right. So it's a few days after that interview now, and I've been using the Surface Pro 3 during that time. Using it from a number of aspects, using it sort of in that laptop replacement type way of operating, been using it as a tablet as well, and enjoying the larger screen size over other tablets that I typically use, and also using the pen or the stylus for writing on the screen, and really using it like a digital pad. Now, in terms of impressions across those things, I find it does work pretty well as a laptop. I guess a couple of things to be aware of. You've just got one USB port built in, so if it's not docked, you do have some limitations. But if you're using it at your desk, you would usually probably purchase the docking station, which gives you five USB ports there, as well as your connection to gigabit Ethernet and your monitor and so on. Yeah, I think that's probably workable in most situations. In terms of using it on your lap, my experience with that was pretty good. There are certainly still some things that you can do with a laptop in terms of resting it while you're maybe working or playing on your laptop in unusual sort of situations. If you're sitting on a couch, or you're lying in bed looking at content and so on, that's probably a little bit different. So, those are things you need to work in. Are there unusual sort of situations in which you would want to use your laptop that may not fit so well for a converged sort of two-in-one device like the Surface Pro 3? But really, in most of the situations I've used it, it's actually been very, very good, and it's quite snappy. That sort of 12-inch screen size works quite well for me. I'm used to having a laptop with a smaller type of screen. The handwriting straight into OneNote I found is very good for taking notes in meetings, and surprisingly, with such a large screen size, it actually is quite workable as a tablet, and that's really because it's such a thin and reasonably light device. We're talking 800 grams, so yep, it's a chunk heavier than the than some of the smaller tablets, but because of that thinness, it's actually pretty comfortable to use. So we're talking just over 9 millimeters thick. Pretty workable, and I'm hoping to get a bit more time on the Surface Pro 3 over the next few weeks. And of course, it's not out in New Zealand until I think the end of August at this stage. So I'll certainly be sharing more of those experiences in the next little while. But I think a pretty exciting device actually. And yeah, when I look at the original Surface Pro and the Surface Pro 2 with their 10.6 inch screen, smaller keyboard, for me they weren't really quite enough to make them a real sort of go to product to replace a laptop. But I'm sort of starting to think that the Surface Pro 3 may well sort of tick the boxes for most laptop use, while being considerably lighter and thinner than most if not all laptops that are available currently. So yeah, I think this is a pretty exciting product for Windows users out there. All right, well that's it on the Surface Pro 3. And now, before we finish up, it'll be remiss of me not to mention that Apple have recently finished up their Worldwide Developers Conference. And you know, they shared as they usually do each year at this time some new things, you know, primarily focusing on the future of iOS, their software for the iPhone and iPad, and also on OS X, the operating system for the Macintosh. So yeah, iOS 8, it's really the next generation of Apple's mobile operating system. Now, two things it incorporates is HomeKit and HealthKit. HomeKit being a software that's going to allow the control of smart home technology, particularly as our homes become a place for more tech that fits into that Internet of Things category, such as digitally controlled lighting, heating, security systems, and so on. And then HealthKit, well, that, you know, it's useful now, but I think its real focus is for the future as we start seeing health-related wearable devices, such as the long-rumored iWatch. And Apple also have a new version of OS X, the new operating system for the Mac, will be OS X 10.10 Yosemite, and that includes a number of things, including a new sort of flatter design, and Apple's iCloud Drive is included, and that goes some way to sort of bringing Apple back into competition with the likes of Dropbox, OneDrive, and Google Drive for cloud file storage. Now, also coming up is a tighter integration between Apple's mobile and desktop operating system platforms, iOS and OS X, and they're really working to sort of seamlessly, enable those different operating systems to work together quite seamlessly, so users can work on the device that suits them, and that might be moving from a phone to their Mac or from their Mac to a tablet. And looks like some good stuff coming there. One of the things that will allow is phone calls to move or to be answered on the device you're on. So you get a phone call on your iPhone, but maybe you don't feel like picking up the iPhone because you're tapping away on your keyboard, or maybe you've left it in the other room. That sort of case, you're actually going to be able to answer a call directly on your Mac and use the built-in microphone and speakers on your Mac to take a call. So it's the first we've seen of this type of thing, and I think there's some really good innovation coming here from Apple. So I think some good things ahead, and it's good to see them sort of stirring up the tech industry with some unique ideas. So we're certainly looking forward to getting hands on with that around the office here. And I'll be reporting back on some of those experiences in the future. So that's really it for this episode of the New Zealand Tech Podcast. Thanks everyone for listening in. We have some other new content coming through in terms of podcasts. So be sure to check out the website for Global Voice Media, which publishes the New Zealand Tech Podcast and a range of New Zealand's other top podcasts. So if you've got some time on your hands to squeeze in another podcast or two, well worth checking in to see what else we've got, and we'll fill you in more on our next episode of the NZ Tech Podcast, which will be coming to you this time again next week. Hey, thanks everyone. See you then. Bye.